And just knowing how much it helped me, I then started volunteering my time to fellow colleagues in the police service who were going were experiencing PTSD, and I started noticing the shift and change in them after a session with them, and I begin to recognize then the power and the efficacy of allowing the body to slow down and detach from the mental racing around and the chatter and reconnect with our body and activate that parasympathetic nervous system to then activate that relaxation response. So just over the years, it's just been a constant refinement of changing and shifting and adapting different core components of yoga, and that's sort of led me to where I am today. And I've developed quite an effective therapy called, and I've decided to call it accelerated relaxation therapy.
TheWellnessCouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives. Download the app today.
Welcome to the Self Love Podcast, the show that helps crack open your heart and inspire a deeper regard for your own well-being and happiness. Proudly brought to you by 28 Essentials. Here's your host, the gorgeous Kim Morrison.
Welcome to the Self Love Podcast. This week, we have an incredible soul, former Queensland police officer turned therapeutic yoga practitioner. The beautiful Hayley Robinson has developed a unique therapeutic approach in facilitating the body back into the relaxation response via targeting the nervous system and the mind-body connection. Drawing upon her own lived experiences with anxiety, ADHD, and an array of life events, beautiful Hayley now channels her life learnings into a passion-fueled purpose, helping others to attain a state of calm, relaxation. I think you'll agree with me that in today's very stressful world, whether we were a frontline police officer, a full-on full-time mum or dad, whether we are chasing the dollar through our work or interest rates changing, life can be incredibly stressful. And as you listen to this beautiful, amazing soul share her story, you will notice what a gift she is to the world. And I'm sure if any of you are suffering with stress, PTSD, anxiety, or any other emotional challenge right now, I know you're going to love this week's interview. She's a beautiful soul inside and out. Cannot wait to share her. And she even has an incredible gift for you. So make sure you listen up to the end to receive her beautiful gift. Make sure you also place your comments and feedback, any response to this beautiful interview, onto my Instagram page, Kim Morrison and the number 28, onto Facebook, Kim Morrison Training. You can head on over to thewellnesscouch.com/selflovepodcast, or you can even head on over to my website, kimmorrison.com, where you will find an array of programs and, of course, the 28 products, all there to support you to live as stress-free life as possible. I cannot wait to hear what you think about beautiful Hayley. Make sure you follow her on her socials, also on the links in the notes. And please do not forget about her incredible gift. Amazing interview today. I cannot wait for you to hear it. Welcome again to the Self Love Podcast. And thank you so much for being on the ride with me each and every week. Here we are in another week with a beautiful soul on the Self Love Podcast. And this week, I am delighted and very excited to welcome to the show the beautiful Hayley Robinson. Welcome, darling.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be interviewed by you today.
It's one of my favorite pastimes, hearing people's stories, understanding what they do to live through their lives, what twists and turns they take, how they overcome hurdles, all the beautiful things that make up this tapestry called life. And so before we get into all of your beautiful work that you're doing in this day and age, Hayley, could you take us back? Take us on a little journey, where you're from, where you grew up, what careers you went down, and what led you into the work that you're doing today?
So I was born in Brisbane, Queensland, and then moved to the beautiful Sunshine Coast when I was 6 or 7. And I remember from an early age, I'm probably about 4 years old, my cousin and I used to play police officer games, and he used to be the police dog and I was a police officer. So even from back then, I had a dream to be a police officer. So I grew up on the Sunshine Coast and moved to London for a year and a half when I was 19. That was a very big awakening for me, and I learned to stand on my own two feet over there, 3 nights in a hostel and then nowhere to go after that. So I had to think on my feet very much and grew up a lot in that time. I came back to the Sunshine Coast after that, and it was only then that I realised the amazingness of the Sunshine Coast, because I was like, oh, Sunshine Coast, but it wasn't until I actually moved away and lived in London that I fully appreciated where we actually live. So I've stayed here ever since. And when I was 28, I then decided to apply for the police and got in. We obviously went through the police academy and did my first year at Kawana Station on the Sunshine Coast, and loved that job, absolutely loved it. I felt like I was serving a purpose. I was living in alignment with my true self and what I was meant to be doing. It felt perfect for me. The excitement, the rush, the anticipation of not knowing what's going to happen, the variety of challenges that sort of came my way were just, it fit with me perfectly. And then, during my time in the police, I knew that I had to sort of counteract all the stress that I was exposed to, the continual up and downs of everything. So I started practicing yoga, and I found it quite effective for helping me just sort of relax and drop down out of that stress response state, and, continued to practice. And then so I finished my first year at Kawana, and then I was posted up to Gympie for my three-year tenure, and I was travelling back and forward. And at that time there was a lot of roadworks. So it was taking nearly an hour and a half to get to and from work each way. And, I was also diagnosed just before that with Hashimoto's disease, which is a thyroid autoimmune. So travelling back and forward, in addition with the constant stress up and down spikes, the inconsistent sleep cycles, my body just ended up in a total mess. And I tried to get put back down here on a medical basis, back down to the Sunshine Coast, so I didn't have to travel as far, but unfortunately that was denied. So, sadly I had to resign from the police. That was a very, very challenging time, because that sort of formed my identity, I guess, and I was serving a purpose, and then all of a sudden I was no longer a police officer. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what my purpose was anymore. And then just after I resigned, I found out that I was pregnant with twins as well. Not long after that, I lost that pregnancy. I found myself in a very, very dark hole of complete and total grief, of completely losing my identity, completely losing myself, in addition to completely losing identical twins, which I had wanted since, I dreamed of having identical twins since I was 16. So, I found myself in a very, very dark space, and I honestly didn't know how I was going to get myself out of it. Everybody was trying to sort of pick me up and perk me up, but I just, I struggled to get myself out of that for a good 6 to 8 months. During that time, an opportunity to come came up to do my yoga teacher training. And so I thought, I'll just dive myself into this, give myself a sense of purpose. And I did spent a year, nearly a year, doing yoga teacher training, and became a certified yoga instructor. And just knowing how much it helped me, I then started volunteering my time to fellow colleagues in the police service who were experiencing PTSD, and I started noticing the shift and change in them after a session with them, and I begin to recognise then the power and the efficacy of allowing the body to slow down and detach from the mental racing around and chatter and reconnect with our body and activate that parasympathetic nervous system to then, yeah, activate that relaxation response. So just over the years, it's just been a constant refinement of changing and shifting and adapting different core components of yoga, and that sort of led me to where I am today. And I've developed quite an effective therapy, and I've decided to call it accelerated relaxation therapy, because it rapidly initiates that relaxation response, and I can take somebody from a very, very heightened state, and within an hour I drop them down into a total, completely different state where they're blissful, peaceful, and you can see firsthand the shift and change in their state of being, from almost like a tortured soul through to this bright light that emanates from them post session. Like, it's an incredible transformation. So, yeah, I guess I've taken all my learnings and all my experiences and just adapted and morphed and extracted bits and pieces from my life and brought it about to what I do today.
Oh, it's an incredible story, and one that when you tell it, it seems so simple to roll off your tongue, but there's a lot in there. And if you don't mind me taking you back a little bit, something that I think is a really important part of being human, you used it a couple of times, and the word was identity. And I'm just fascinated by this, because so often we go through school, we don't really know who we are. We may go to university and to become or get qualified in something, or we become graduates of some other kind of course, which gives us another label or another form of identity. But for you to have that taken away, to have that dream kind of dismissed so quickly and abruptly, I just want to check in with you on that. The idea of identity then as a policewoman, and now, I guess, in the work that you're doing, which is so philosophical and so esoteric and so much bigger than just the body, the mind, or the soul, is there a difference for you now on your definition of what is identity for someone when you're a police officer to who you are now?
I suppose I've learned to, because what I used to form identity was based on external influences, based on external labels, based on everything outside of myself, whereas now my identity is my true self at my core. And it's just having gone through so many different experiences and looking for the silver lining and being able to dive deep within myself to that, what I call the central point of stillness within, going deep within to connect with my true self rather than what society labels me or expects of me or perceives of me. My definition of identity has dramatically shifted and changed from what it used to be. Yeah,
it's incredible how a career change or a health crisis or a different job or anything, becoming even a parent, as you mentioned too, your identity as the mother of identical twins, also taken away from you. Hayley, how have you coped with the shocks, the losses, the changes, the transitions, the what you thought could be to what was actually happening? Were there any things in particular that became very instrumental for you through those dark times? And what was the moment, the real pivotal moment, where you decided to pick yourself up and actually realize you were in control, you had the driver's seat back? Was there anything quite pivotal for you through that time, or was it a gradual process, do you think?
There was one particular day during that time where I was in the darkest of darkest places, that I woke up and with complete calmness I thought, I just don't want to be here anymore. And it was, it was just a total shift in my state of being. I just decided that I just didn't want to be here anymore. And I took the kids to school and sat in my room thinking, okay, where to from here? Don't want to be here anymore. And then I, I remember flicking through Instagram and came across somebody who was doing a drawing of Robin Williams, who had not long passed, and she did this lifelike drawing sketch, a drawing of him, and it was so realistic and so lifelike, and like drawing and art has been a big part of my life, and I detached from that for a very long time, and just sitting there feeling completely empty and lost and not wanting to be here anymore, I watched this girl draw the picture of him, and it was inspiring because I went, maybe I can do that. So I picked myself up and went out to the garage and picked up my pencils and just started drawing and started drawing and started drawing and drawing and drawing. And then, next thing I knew, it was time to go and get the kids from school, and that sort of, that was a very pivotal moment for me. And then from there, I started incorporating the drawing into my daily life. I suppose it was just my way of processing and releasing emotions on a subliminal level. And then I continued to draw and use drawing and painting and any form of art as a therapeutic basis to allow me to process. So any time that stuff was coming up for me, I would just sit down and draw. And then from that I would tap into what they call the flow state or the zone, getting into the zone where you'd enter the state of peace and tranquility where no thoughts would enter your mind. You were just in a pure present moment. And that was very, very profound in the catalyst towards helping me heal through that loss of identity, the loss of twins. And it then started to reconnect me with, my true self, because at my heart I'm a very creative person. And so that allowed me just to dive deep into that creative aspect of myself and, use that as the catalyst for shifting and changing the trajectory of my life.
Oh, I just want to take my hat off to you. And so many of those moments when we are feeling at our worst or at our lowest can so change with taking action. And I just truly believe there's no accidents that you happened to be on Instagram seeing that image around that time. And as we know, the amazing Robin Williams was in a pretty tortured state himself. And often we look at people and someone like you who's so beautiful and seemingly so has it together. Do you think so many people are misread, misunderstood, that we perhaps as humans hide behind a facade, yet behind that we do feel tortured? And if we do feel that, what if you hadn't come across that Instagram thing? Like what is important to you now talking to people who are feeling at that lower part of their lives? Is there any advice you would give someone right here, right now?
So we very much do hide behind a mask. We never fully understand what's really going on with people because we have this false illusion that we portray to the world that sort of based on societal expectations of what we need to put forth to the world. And a lot of people feel great shame and shameful about how they're actually feeling on the inside and not willing to share and exercising that vulnerability to be able to voice and communicate what's actually going on for them is very difficult because it so often people think it's being weak when actually it's very courageous to be able to speak up and be able to voice what's actually going on for you. So using my past experience of that, I've been able to tap right into that deep level of unconditional positive regard and empathy for people, because you never truly know what's going on the inside for them. And when you offer that safe space for people to actually be vulnerable and to open up and to voice what they're actually going through, it's very therapeutic for them. And it's like that saying, a problem shared is a problem halved, allowing them that space, that safe space to be able to communicate, that is one of the first steps towards healing. So my advice to people would be, don't be ashamed to speak up. Don't be ashamed to share what you're going through, because you'll be very surprised. But there's a lot of people out there going through exactly the same things as what you're going through. It's just that nobody, or most people, choose not to share it because of fear of looking weak or being segregated, because nobody wants to be, on the outside or dismissed or forgotten about or neglected.
And yet when we're in that space, we tend to withdraw and we tend to pull away. I know myself, I don't really want to be around people when I'm feeling really down, but I also know it's the most important thing, not only to feel it and to therefore heal it, but then to actually take action. And they say that drawing has such a huge connection to developing and stimulating the brain function. It also apparently, from memory, is very, very good at helping to increase our cognitive functions and actually become more creative and right-brained, which I think is something that creativity, that beautiful openness, that half glass full attitude is quite interesting when we are in that right side of our brain, where we do want to just get creative and expansive and connect to our emotions. Is there anything in particular in your thoughts around, you know, those books, they're like drawing books where you could doodle and you can actually color them in? Do you believe that something, if someone's not a good drawer, like i.e. me, I would feel like I'd be failing at that. But do you think there's light or there's something good in those books that we can actually color in as adults as well? Is that just as creative and helpful in your opinion?
Yeah, it is just as creative and helpful to those who feel that they can't draw. But I don't believe anybody can't draw. I think everybody has that potential within them. It's just that we tend to form that label upon ourselves, and that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that, like, people can constantly reiterate, I can't draw, I can't draw. So you're not going to allow yourself to be able to draw because you're putting up that roadblock and that self-limiting belief. I do therapeutic art with people as well, where I teach them to remove that that preconceived expectation of themselves, that I can't draw. So I forget about that objective. I said about allowing them to tap into their creativity and just allowing the hand to move freely across the paper without thinking, without controlling, and just letting it flow. And quite often it begins to happen and begins to morph and begins to then unfold right before their eyes when they detach from that that label that they've put on themselves. So those colouring in books are fantastic when starting off on that journey and using art as a therapeutic medium. And because it allows you to become familiar with the paper, it allows you to become familiar with the pencils and immerse yourself in the moment, because there's great power in being in that mindfulness state in the moment of freely just moving that pen across the paper. But once you sort of begin to allow and get the feel of dropping into that flow state, then you can then step forward onto a blank piece of paper and just allow that hand to freely move and be guided by just the movement of the hand, and that it's like a it's an inner guidance, so I guess, that allows you to just start to project things on the page, and you're there quite surprised by what you're capable of doing when you start to allow yourself just to draw freely without any labels, without any expectations or any objectives.
Oh, this is perfect. It's almost a little bit like singing. I've interviewed musicians who say everyone can sing. And yet, if I think I can sing until I hear it played back. I think I can do art until I see my artwork. But one thing that I remember doing a number of years ago was going to art classes. And it honestly felt like adult kindergarten. It was the most relaxing, most enjoyable thing. And just to have someone there help you with the medium, or to finish a drawing, or to make something look a little bit better, it gave you the confidence. I find it interesting that art is such a big part of your world, and your business is called Accelerated Relaxation Therapies, or the work that you do, which is an acronym, is ART. Is ART really a very big part of your world then, as far as healing and helping people with PTSD, anxiety, recovery from different stress responses? Is that something that's really important to you? And if so, can you explain to us a little bit more about the ART, the work that you do?
Yeah, so the creativity aspect is basically the core component of everything that I do. So when I do the accelerated relaxation therapy or therapeutic yoga or therapeutic art, it all comes and stems from the creativity aspect. I have only ever once written out a yoga class. I do everything from feel, because I take a moment to tap into whoever is presented in front of me, and I start to co-regulate my breath with the person. I start to tap into the energy, and I start to feel, and I'm guided by what they're feeling and what they're experiencing in the moment. And I it's hard, very hard to explain, but I get this urge of what I need to do with them. So I'm sort of guided by what they're needing in that moment. And so from there, that's when I start, it's almost like downloading, essentially, like all these different bits and pieces that I need to incorporate into it. So that's essentially that creativity element coming through. And from there, that's where I just sort of take things and go with things. And if I ever try to not go with what I'm feeling and I go with what I'm thinking, that's when there's a big disparity, and that's when things go off course and I don't deliver the best session possible. So I've learned to just go with what I'm feeling. It doesn't always make sense, but I just go with that sort of, yeah, that flow that starts channeling through me. And then, yeah, so often at the end, they're like, how did you know I needed that? Like, it was perfect. And when you put me into that pose or that position, I just had this huge emotional release. I was able to let go. And I truly believe it's because I'm tapping into that creativity and channeling it down from either my higher self or their higher self or wherever it comes from. I can't explain it, but it's the creativity is very fundamental in everything that I do.
Yeah, it's actually quite an incredible thing if we can allow ourselves to let go. And I guess all the things you're doing, whether it's art, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, I think all of these actually allow us to let go of the thinking and fall more into the feeling. Mm-hmm. One of my therapists always said to me, you have to feel it to truly heal it. How do you think art, yoga, breath work, amazing kind of therapies that you do, meditation, how does that, in your humble opinion, give you, as you said at the beginning, the counter effects of the daily stresses that we live through? Is there a real science in behind it, or is it just something nice to do?
No, there is actually a lot of science behind it. So there's a plethora of studies covering yoga, meditation, mindfulness, and the efficacy on that, and how it actually assists the body to drop down into something called the parasympathetic nervous state through the activation of something called the vagal nerve. So we've got our nervous system, we've got our central nervous system, which is the the brain and brain and the spinal cord. And then we've got something called the peripheral nervous system, which is sort of everything that extends out from that central part. And then that it sort of divides down like a family tree kind of thing. So we've got an autonomic nervous system, and that autonomic nervous system is then divided into two subsections or three subsections, but two of the ones that I focus on are the sympathetic, which is the stress response, the flight or fight response, and then we've got the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the relaxation response. So nearly every single one of us is in a stressed out state. So stress doesn't have to come from like an emotional stress or being stressed out at work. Stress can come from the blue light from our screens. It can come from air pollution. It can come from foods that are incompatible with our biology. It can come from emotional stress. It can come from thinking about past events or future events. It can come from so many different aspects. And so nearly all of us are continuously stressed because we live in a hyper-stimulated world. And then what I do is allowing the mind to slow down. And when we slow down the mind, then the body can slow down as well. And then that then activates that parasympathetic nervous system. So that's what I really focus on, is dropping people out of that stress response and dropping them down into that relaxation response, and using highly specific modalities to initiate that and activate that parasympathetic nervous system.
Ask you then, from a perspective of, it's the chicken and egg question, is it important for the mind to quieten for the body, or for the body to relax for the mind, or does it matter to you?
I find when the body is relaxed, the mind begins to relax. So there's a saying that I like to use: the mind controls the body and the body controls the mind. So it's a self-perpetuating cycle. If our mind is racing and thinking stressed out thoughts, our body is going to start to respond in accordance with that. So our body will start to activate and start to get hypervigilant, start to become more active and more uptight, and muscles will start to contract, will start to race a bit more. And then when our body's behaving in that manner, it then sends signals back up to the brain: oh, we're behaving in a stressed out way, there's something to be stressed about, let's activate more of that neurochemistry, which is going to further exacerbate that hypervigilant state, which therefore goes back down to the body. So it's a self-perpetuating cycle. But what I find is what's more effective is I first target the body. I get the body to relax. And when the body starts relaxing, I'm essentially cutting off that self-perpetuating cycle, get that body nice and relaxed. And then the mind can, send signals to the brain, and it's like, oh, okay, the body's relaxed. We're not doing anything. We're laying here calm and relaxed. Obviously, there's nothing to worry about. And so the brain starts to relax down and the thoughts start to slow down. The mind starts to empty. And then that's how we can quickly drop people down into that relaxation response, through allowing the body just to slow down, allowing the body to stop, and giving our body the break that it so desperately needs in our very busy, busy life.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because they say in order to tap into the quantum physical realm, or to actually go beyond the zero-point field of potentiality, to actually slip into enlightenment or deep, deep relaxation, that if we focus on the breath and the body first and foremost, really nurturing the body through that state, it's incredible how we access different levels of consciousness. When you do meditations for people, when you actually take them on a relaxation process, are there some who fight it physically? Like, I'm just trying to picture some people who are highly stressed or driven by adrenaline. How on earth do you get someone to actually switch into that more calm, relaxed, parasympathetic state, especially when we're in a world that is so sympathetic dominance related? What do you think, for someone listening to this who may be with someone or knows someone, or they themselves are quite highly, I guess, strung out or living on edge or adrenaline junkie, whatever it is we want to call it, what would you say is the first thing they need to do? Because we can't survive like that long term, can we?
No, because the body will burn out. The body's not designed to be in a continual state of go. I do have a few clients, regular clients, who they fight it. They fight dropping. Their bodies just fight it. And you can see it. Because I'm constantly observing the body, constantly watching for little tiny signals and cues to know when they, because you can see when they drop into it. And I can see they'll move their feet, they'll twitch their feet because they're fighting dropping down into it. And so rather than trying to keep pursuing and keep going along the way that I'm going, I pivot and I match what they're doing. So if somebody's fighting it, you can see obviously the brain is still not shutting down. The brain is still darting here, there and everywhere because the signals are showing within the body. So I match that through doing different techniques which match what's going on in their brain. So rather than trying to get them to relax their body and just go through the process of dropping down different parts of the body and allowing it to relax, I then will dart different sensory systems around. So I'll say, just bringing your awareness to the feeling of the air on the skin and just notice that gentle cool breeze that passes by the skin. Now bringing the awareness to the noises that surround you and start to take in all those different noises, start to become aware of the different noises, taking your mind outside of this room and listening to the bird and the tree and listening to the different sound of the chirp of the bird and the tree. Then drawing your attention back to the toes and just notice the toes. Just start to bring the awareness to the toes and feeling the warmth of the toes. And start to feel the air surrounding the toes and just notice how the toes feel. Then bringing the awareness to the tip of the nose and just start to feel that breath flowing in through the nose and out through the nose. And so with that because I'm darting around to all these different sensory systems, it's matching what's going on in their brain and it's matching the speed of their brain. And I find when I'm darting everything around like that, their brain starts to think about all the different things that I'm moving around to, and then I strategically start slowing things down. And then when I start to slow things down and bring their awareness and then slowly start to drop the body into a more relaxed state through bringing the awareness to certain parts of the body, then that'll drop them quickly down into that relaxation response. So that's how I've learned to override that individual who's consistently fighting that, dropping down into that relaxation response.
Well, I don't know if any of the listeners felt the same as me there, but your voice is very seductive and very easy to relax to. How then? Let's swap this now. Let's go back to the police force. Our frontline workers have an incredibly stressful job. I'm in awe of what they do, from traffic right through to incidences of home and domestic issues, right through to big, you know, federal issues and lots of amazing different crimes and, I guess, interactions and humanity. I can't imagine being a police officer is an easy job, given the amount of, I guess, negativity that you would see on a daily basis. Is this something that you think is needed in the police force? Is there enough focus for police to actually have the counter side of all the stress and everything they go through? And what would your message to these amazing frontliners be as far as the workers that you offer?
So there is a very, very, very real need, particularly in the police service, for an opportunity for them to begin to counteract everything that they have going on as part of their job. The QAS and QFAS are very good at integrating different aspects to assist with negating the effects of stress that they experience. However, with the police service, it's almost seen as weak. You've got to uphold this very strong stance, like I'm the tough guy, I nothing rattles me, nothing shakes me. And that attitude in itself is the undoing of people, because it's like from societal aspect, it's considered weak to talk about how vulnerable or be vulnerable, I guess, and talk about feelings and if think something's upsetting you. And so often you see years of withholding all these stresses in the body, and then they crumble down into PTSD state. So it is very much needed. It's very much, a needed part to be integrated into the service as part of the job. I was actually doing for a little while there, working with the mental health section here on the Sunshine Coast, Australian mental wellness program that they had going. So I'd go up there and do yoga with some of the staff members up there. So that was really good doing that, and that enabled them to drop down. But then it was in a group setting, so it was very difficult for them to let their guard down and allow themselves to fully relax. But the beauty of doing the one-on-one stuff is it's more private. It's more it's a safer space where they can then drop down into that relaxation response and not have to worry about what other people thinking about them. The PTSD needs to be dealt with a lot better in the service, because you think like you go to an event and biologically we're meant to shake every experience that we have off. We're meant to get that experience out of our body. Like, you see, if you take your dog, if anyone's got a dog, take your dog for a walk, and they come across a threat or another dog, you'll see that the hair stands on end. And then once that threat's gone, they'll shake. They give themselves a good shake and they shake that stress off. It happens out in the wild. There's this fantastic clip on YouTube where there's this, I think it's a cheetah, and it's caught this gazelle, and the gazelle's gone into the flight or fight, was gone into a freeze response where it's playing dead. And then these baboons come along and chase the cheetah away. And then once it's safe, the gazelle is laying there and looks like it's convulsing. Well, what it's actually doing is it's discharging all that energy from that adrenaline rush or that adrenaline dump that it's had, and then it shakes it all off and it gets up and off it goes. So animals do that intuitively. They allow their bodies to discharge that energy and get that out of their nervous system. However, as humans, it's not socially acceptable to stand there and give ourselves a good shake and shake off that stress response that we've just had. So over years and years and years of continually going to a job and encountering a stressful event, we can't stand there and shake it off. So we start, we hold those emotions in, we stuff it down. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, your bucket's full, and then the bucket tips over, and that's how PTSD, it looks like one event triggers it. One event, and some people are like, I don't even know how that triggered the PTSD. It was just something so simple. However, it's a compounding effect. It's years and years and years of what other people aren't seeing, of what's being stuffed down inside them and not dealt with appropriately. And then that one tiny little event then tips them over the edge, and then they end up with PTSD. And it's very, very difficult then to come back to a post-PTSD state after that. So learning how to healthily deal with the stresses that they encounter is very vital in making sure that mental health of the service is upkept. And
I just was really, really listening to each and every word, because it doesn't matter whether in the police force or what job we do. As parents, we have this stress response is everyday living, with the cost of living, interest rates, pressures financially, all of these things can create this stress response. And so I feel like the police and all of that is a beautiful metaphor for the rest of us who aren't in that industry, but we still have the same effects. One other thing you mentioned very briefly at the beginning was around sleep. And I guess with people who do shift work, people who are in highly stressed jobs, etc., sleep is one of those things that seems to get very much overlooked, yet it's one of the most profound and important things and aspects of health. How did you counteract that for yourself? Is that where meditation comes in? Is that another thing that you help people with to help them really learn how to sleep properly?
Yes, sleep is I can't stress enough how important sleep is, because it allows our brain to repair. There's something called the glymphatic system, where our brain flushes out of the nighttime. It's only recently discovered functioning of the body, where every night when we go to sleep, there's a big flushing out of the fluid in the brain. And when we're not getting enough sleep, or we don't enter that right sleep state, it doesn't work appropriately. So sleep is very, very important, and incorporating practices like the meditation or yoga right before bed allows the body to drop down into a more calm and relaxed state, which then acts as a catalyst to a fantastic sleep. Like, there's a few clients I have of an evening, and they always say, I have the best sleep after yoga, because it sets the body up for that that prime state of going into a deep, relaxed sleep state. So, yeah, sleep is very, very important, and it's not something that we can later catch up on. If we go for a couple of nights with, say, 3-4 hours, we can't catch up on that later on. We can't go, I'll need an extra 3-4 hours over the next few days to catch up on that sleep. So making sleep a priority, having that between 8 and 9 hours each night, then going to bed roughly around the same time each night, allows the body to get into that rhythm. It allows for all the different biological processes that happen to get into a more set rhythm, and then you'll find that everything starts to function a lot better when we get a consistent sleep happening. I know from a mental health perspective for myself, like, if I don't get enough sleep, I find that I'm more easily stressed out by things the next day. I'm not able to regulate my emotions as effectively as what I would if I had, say, because I need about 9 hours. So if I had 9 hours, I'm bouncing around like a spring chicken and I feel fantastic. Whereas if I only get, say, 5 hours, I'm an emotional wreck and I'm relying on coffee to keep me awake and I'm erratic, and I just find that I can't settle myself because my brain hasn't had that time to drop down into that deep sleep state to repair and regenerate and do everything that it does during sleep, that deep sleep state.
Yeah, it's a very, very important part of health and wellness. So we've got sleep, we've got meditation, beautiful breathing, calming, eating good foods. All of these things are acts of self-love, in my humble opinion. It's actually respecting the body enough to know how important it is to take care of the vehicle, but of course also the mind as well. In your humble opinion, are these, and is there any other acts of self-love, and what is your definition of self-love?
My definition of self-love would be take time every day to stop and do nothing. Because we're constantly on the go, we're constantly being alerted by text messages, email notifications, something going on with work, don't have to pick up the kids, we're rushing here, there and everywhere, our brains are constantly full, our bodies are constantly on the go, and allowing ourselves that time, like even 5 to 10 minutes, just sitting in a chair, finding a nice chair outside, like if you can get outside, putting your bare feet on the ground is even better. But taking 5 to 10 minutes each day to sit there and do nothing, put the phone away, turn the phone on silent, take the phone off the hook, put a do not disturb on the front door or on the office cubicle or just something, and just sit there and blankly stare at the wall. It'll be difficult, it'll be challenging at the beginning because we're we're almost addicted to that go, 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 go. Got to have something in my head, got to keep myself moving and doing something all the time. But when we actually start to practice that on a more regular basis, that just stopping and doing nothing, we'll find that our bodies then can drop quite quickly into that calm, relaxed state. And it just gives our bodies that opportunity to catch up and to have that pause. And then once we get up after that moment of doing nothing, we'll find that our energy levels have perked back up again. It's not quite like having a little sleep, but it's just our bodies can just stop. And so there's great therapeutic benefits in just stopping and doing nothing.
I love this so much. One of the things that I think from your point of view, do you feel that the Hashimoto's was brought on by the stress? What's the relationship with the Hashimoto's and those biomarkers that allowed you to learn of this autoimmune disease that you were carrying? And then could you talk us through getting that diagnosis, and then how have you managed and healed yourself?
So it's funny because I used to read Sarah Wilson's blog. Sarah Wilson was the I Quit Sugar lady, and she's got Hashimoto's. And I used to love reading her blog every Sunday night. She put a new blog up. And so she had Hashimoto's, and she used to talk about it quite often. And I remember it was not long after I graduated from the police academy that I started not feeling right. And everything that I was experiencing was what she used to speak about in her blog. And so I remember one night I was sitting on the couch and feeling like I was going to die. Like every single cell in my body was dying. And my partner at the time, he said, go to the doctor, you need to go and get checked. And I was tired. I put on like 20 kilos in the space of a month or something ridiculous. Out of my eyebrows started falling off. My skin was pale, I was cold all the time. And I just felt really unwell, and I just did not feel right. And I went to the doctor and I said, can you just test me for Hashimoto's? And he's like, has your family got Hashimoto's? I was like, no. And he said, well, I don't need to test you for it. And I was like, can you please test me for Hashimoto's? Like, I've got all the symptoms. And he said, well, there's no family history. And so I had to get quite stern for him to run the test for the antibodies to check for Hashimoto's. And then, 2 days later, came back and said, oh, doctor wants to speak with you urgently. And went back and he's like, oh, you've got Hashimoto's. And I was like, huh, I knew. So anyway, I went on a very, very big journey with that, like learning to understand what makes the Hashimoto's worse, what accelerates or exacerbates those antibodies which are attacking, we have the immune response which is attacking my thyroid. I learned very quickly that certain foods would make it worse. So I stay clear of dairy and wheat and anything that's going to cause inflammation in my body, because when our bodies are in an inflamed state, it's just going to exacerbate that autoimmune attack. I've learned that keeping my stress levels as low as possible assists with the reduction in symptoms that I experience. And I've also recently started a medication called low-dose naltrexone. So at a high dose, naltrexone is prescribed for people with addictions like alcohol addictions or opioid addictions. But at a low dose, it almost works almost like a homeopathic principle. So somehow they can't actually figure out why or how it does it, but it does something to adjust the immune system and slow down that immune response and that attack on the thyroid. So, yeah, taking the low-dose naltrexone, and it's completely transformed me. I feel like somebody has turned the on switch on in my body, and it the difference is like night and day in my body. So that's what I take at the moment for the Hashimoto's, and I also take T3 only. I did try the T4, but it didn't work and my body just didn't like it. So I now take the T3 only, which assists with the energy production pathways. And I just make sure that I have, like a very clean diet, making sure I steer away from anything that's going to promote the inflammation within my body. And then keeping the stress levels to a minimum as well. So that's sort of my self-treatment protocol, I guess, in managing that Hashimoto's.
Oh, it's powerful and just such a beautiful reminder to do these things, even if you don't have this, because so many people wait until a diagnosis before they change, pivot, or adapt their lifestyles. So I think taking these words of advice from you is not only important, they're profound. So thank you so much for sharing that. Do you mind if I just ask you one last question? It may be a hard one. It certainly triggered an emotional response in you, which did the same for me. But losing those beautiful twins, when you go through such huge loss, especially something that, as you said, you had dreamed about, how did you navigate that low, beautiful Hayley? And do you have any advice for any beautiful souls out there also experiencing loss right now?
The grieving process took a very long time for me. Because it was something that I wanted for so long. And to be given that opportunity and then to have that opportunity taken away from me was very, very difficult to deal with. I went through a range of different emotions in the grieving process multiple times. And there was days where I'd just wake up and not want to get out of bed. And, what I spoke about earlier about that just not wanting to be here anymore and finding the drawing and finding something that I could, give my mind something to do through that grieving process. Helped a lot because it wasn't so much took my mind off it, but it allowed me to, in a healthy way, allow my emotions to be expressed out on the page or expressed out on the yoga mat through the movement and allowing my body to move those emotions out of the body. So I guess anybody going through a grief process at this point of time would be, firstly, just surround yourself with a supportive network, making sure that you're constantly checking in with people. As low and as heartbreaking as things can get and can feel, it does get better. Time does heal all wounds, and slowly and surely the light in your life starts to come back. My strongest piece of advice would be give yourself something to dive deep into, not to so much to distract yourself or not deal with the emotions, but it's use it as a medium to allow those emotions to be processed and move their way out of the body. So whether it's drawing or whether it's yoga or whether it's just getting out in the fresh air and going for a walk or grounding yourself on the grass outside, bare feet on the ground, or whether it's just being vulnerable and talking with somebody, whether it's a close friend or a medical professional, just don't suffer in silence and don't try and do it all by yourself, because that's when things can get pretty dark. And making sure that you bring in those elements of that self-care each day as well, because I know I neglected myself a lot, and I know that I just I didn't want to get up and have a shower. I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to do anything. So ensuring that you continue to look after yourself during those dark times will just, it will help the process, and it will help move you through that tough time just a little bit more comfortably.
Yeah. Thank you so much for highlighting that. You know, you've been through a heck of a lot. You've done a lot. You've achieved a lot. And now you give back a lot. Also, you happen to have a delicious life now, your children, you've got a beautiful soul in your world. If people wanted to follow you and to keep an eye on all the amazing things you're doing, or even perhaps reach out to you for a one-on-one session, could you tell us, beautiful Hayley, where we can get hold of you?
So I do have social media accounts, but I must admit I'm not very good at social media and keeping up to date with it all, because it sort of goes against what I teach. Like, social media has that ability to activate that stress response, so probably don't visit me on social media. My website is a good place to come and find me and find a bit more about what I do. So it's just my name, so Hayley Robinson, HayleyRobinson.com.au. And there I've also popped on a link there where you can go to and just fill any details, and I can email a free 10-minute meditation as well, just to incorporate into your daily life, just to help with that facilitation of activating that parasympathetic nervous system or the relaxation response.
Oh, this is such a beautiful
guest, yeah.
Yeah, what a beautiful gift, and I want to thank you. I'll put the link in the show notes, but in case anyone's driving or listening to this, head on over to beautiful Hayley's website, hayleyrobinson.com.au, and you will see the link for her free 10-minute meditation, which I could not recommend enough. If you had a little taste of hearing her before, you'll see how hypnotic and easy it is to fall into a beautiful trance-like state with this gorgeous soul. Hayley, tell us a little bit about the latest happenings going on in your world, what you and Ben are up to, and where you're at as far as really focusing on your future and helping others.
So, with Ben, he's actually just launched his online photography program, which we're both very, very excited about, because he's poured 4 years of his life into creating this program, and it's really comprehensive, and it'll take somebody from being a complete novice to a professional in the photography industry and enable them to start up their own business. So we're both super excited about the launch of that and getting that up and going. So I've been sort of helping Ben support Ben through that process. Just particularly through this last few months as well, while it's all launching and getting up and going. For myself, I am wanting, I'm just putting it out there to the universe at the moment. I haven't actually found a particular spot, but I'm going to open up a small studio somewhere. So I've already put it out to the universe. I know exactly what it looks like. I know the feel of it. I know the vibe it will sort of ignite within people when they enter that space. So that's coming. I have complete faith that is coming. I don't know when, I don't know how, but the universe will provide that. Later on down the track, I would like to write a book as well, because I have a plethora of information and just strategies and techniques that I think are vitally important for people to incorporate into their daily life as well. So, I've got the basic framework set up with that. So, I'll get chipping away soon on that. Yeah. Get that out and going.
Well, I think this is inspiration plus, and it's certainly a driver, because I know we'd all be very, very interested in seeing that. Just in case anyone is a budding photographer, tell us Ben's website. We will have him on the show at some point. But just in case anyone went, oh, photography, that's so me. How do we find out about that beautiful course he's about to launch?
So that if you go to bcphoto.com.au, there'll be information on there on how to, sign up to the program and start learning. So he's got, I think it's 11, gosh, sorry, Ben, I think it's 11 different modules and over like 16 hours worth of content. It's very, very comprehensive. So it's BC Photo, so bcphoto.com.au.
Oh, you're a darling. Well, you know, as we come to a close of our beautiful conversation, I just firstly just want to acknowledge you for the journey, the learnings, and then the sharing of how to go through similar journeys and learnings. And just what you're offering now is so needed through your art, ART, Accelerated Relaxation Therapy, plus your yoga and all of the beautiful work that you're offering. I've been wanting to get you on the show for a long time, understanding that the world really does live in a very sympathetic, dominant state, and how important the work of someone like you is needed. And I just want to say thank you. I'm sorry you had to go through what you went through, but we all know that what we go through, we grow through. And then if we choose to share that back with humanity, then what a beautiful purpose and a reason for these challenges that we all seem to face. So Hayley Robinson, thank you so much for all that you gift and offer this world. As a closing statement, perhaps you could give our gorgeous listener your final message and include maybe one of your favorite quotes right now.
Oh, my favorite quote right now would have to be one from Gabor Mate, and it is, "You are more important than your attachments." Historically, I'm a notorious people pleaser, and when I heard that quote, it hit me like a Mack truck. And it then, it brought me back to myself, and it reminded me I need to put myself first. Myself is the most important person in this entire world. So, understanding that I am the most important person, not everybody else. It hits home very, very much. So that's my favorite saying.
I love it. You are more important than your attachments. Quite deep, actually. Very profound also, which is totally in line with everything that you do. Beautiful Hayley, thank you again for being with me in this hour and for sharing your story, your wisdom, your knowledge, and also your learnings. They are so important and so incredible. And I want to thank you again wholeheartedly for being on the Self Love Podcast.
You're very welcome, Kim. It was an absolute pleasure to be on here with you today.
Thanks for listening to the Self Love Podcast. Be sure to write a review and share the love with your friends and family. And head over and visit Kim and her team at 28.com. That's the word 20 and the number 8.com. Take good care.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.